But as Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream, saying. Now this Belteshazzar was a heathen name given to recognize an idolatrous god. And the king even describes Daniel here as being one in the spirit of the holy gods. And I have to think he just didn't have enough understanding of the true nature of God to make a statement like this. But he's probably trying to say that Daniel was filled with the Holy Spirit, or had the Holy Spirit of God to some extent to be able to interpret the dream. So I called him in, saying, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in thee, and no secret troubleth thee, tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen, and the interpretation thereof. Thus were the visions of my head in my bed I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height of it was great, So now this is what he saw in his dream. He saw a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. As we're going to find, this tree was symbolic of Nebuchadnezzar as he reigned in this mighty Babylonian empire. Mighty men are portrayed as kings in several places. And so we see then that what happens to the tree would happen to Nebuchadnezzar. So the tree grew, was strong, and the height thereof reached unto the heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it, and the fowls of the heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. I saw in the visions of my head and upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. Now this watcher and holy one, they happen to be heavenly beings in Nebuchadnezzar's concept of different orders, probably. Heavenly beings of different orders. And probably they were angels. But this is what he saw. But the way he described them were as heavenly, were as a watcher and a holy one. He cried aloud and said thus, hew down the tree, cut off his branches, shake off his leaves, and scatter his fruit. Let the beast get away from under it, and the fowl from the branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, and the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast and the grass of the earth. And let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. Now that's what this holy one said. Cut down the tree, scatter everything, scatter the fruit, get the beast out from them, the fowls out, everybody get away from it, cut it off, nothing's going to be left but a stump out in the grass, and the dew will fall on it. And his heart, speaking of the king, his heart will be changed from a man's heart to a beast's heart, and he'll be turned out into the field to eat grass like a beast. And let seven times pass over him. Now some of the commentators state flatly that seven times means 7 years. But others say that the word times here, as it's used in the Chaldean language, means seasons. And that they only recognize two seasons of the year, winter and summer. And so seven times or seven seasons would be 3.5 years. Now what this is actually describing here is a time in which Nebuchadnezzar became insane. And he lived like a beast in the field. He lost all contact with his kingdom. Yet his kingdom remained intact in his absence. And then when his insanity ended, he came back and resumed the reign in his kingdom. That's what it's actually describing here. Now, I'd like to read something here that's interesting to me. As they were archaeologically excavating this city of Babylon, in one of Nebuchadnezzar's inscriptions, giving an account of his buildings and accomplishments, occurs this as read by Sir Henry Rawlings, quote, "For 4 years the residence of my kingdom did not delight my heart. In no one of my possessions did I erect any important buildings by my might. I did not put up buildings in Babylon for myself and the honor of my name. In the worship of Merodach, my god, I did not sing his praise, nor did I provide his altar with sacrifices, nor clean the canals." End of quote. This is thought by some possibly to be a reference to his insanity, though ancient kings, in having their inscriptions made, avoided recording such things. So I thought that was an interesting thing that was found there, that he stated that for a period of 4 years he didn't do any kind of work. Didn't praise his God. Didn't do anything to bring any glory to the kingdom. And it's thought to be a reference to this period of his insanity. This matter, now continuing in verse 17, is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. Now the conclusion of this dream is that this is given to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. There's three things here that he points out. Number one is that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. So it doesn't have to be now the kingdom of heaven. It doesn't have to be the kingdom of Judea or Israel or any holy kingdom. The Most High One ruleth in the kingdom of men. That's number one. Number two, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. It's his will as to who's going to have the rulership in these kingdoms. And number three, and setteth over it the basest of men. So just because God sets a man over a kingdom doesn't mean he's going to be the best man, the most intelligent, the most holy, the most godlike. He describes here as the basest of men. Now, this doesn't mean that every king or every ruler will be the worst man that could be found, but it does mean that some will be. And it could mean that all would be. So just because there's a bad ruler, say like Hitler, Mussolini, or any of the dictators, Batista in Cuba, or the czars in Russia, or Khrushchev in Russia, or whoever may be in this country, doesn't mean that God still didn't have the hand in putting him there, and that God still doesn't work and rule through him to bring about the events of this world. But this is stated quite plainly now in this dream. That's the whole purpose of the dream to Nebuchadnezzar. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof. For as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation, but thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. So Daniel pondered this for 1 hour. Said he was astonished for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Belteshazzar answered and said, My lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof to thine enemies. You're not going to like what you hear about this dream, king. It's in favor of those that hate you and your enemies. It's not going to be a good thing for you. The tree that thou sawest, which grew and was strong, whose height reached into the heavens, and the sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of the heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And of course Belteshazzar was, Nebuchadnezzar was probably the most powerful king of all time. Certainly up to that time he was. And whereas the king saw a watcher and a holy one coming down from heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass and the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of the heaven, and let his portion be with the beast of the field till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as an oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Now, the whole purpose of this is so Nebuchadnezzar would get the point that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and he giveth it to whomsoever he will. He's going to show Nebuchadnezzar that he can take this away from him anytime he wants to. He can give it to somebody else if he wants to. And he rules in this kingdom. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. What he means here is that no other king is going to take your place during this time. It's going to be left there for you. After you get this lesson that the heavens do rule, the kingdom will be yours to have again. Therefore, O king, now this is Daniel's plea. Therefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. So he tells the king, change your life. Change your ways. Break off your sins by righteousness, and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. There must have been a lot of things in this kingdom that the king wasn't doing properly. There must be some things here that were displeasing to God. Maybe he was abusing some of the Hebrew captives. Who knows? But he said something about replacing sin with righteousness and replacing his iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. That it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Now in verse 28, there's a lot said in that verse. All this came upon the king Nebuchadnezzar. So that's Daniel's way, that's the writer's way of, as he takes up the narrative, of having to go through and repeat all of this. Although he does some repeating, he just lets you know that it happened. At the end of 12 months, now this is interesting here as to how it was brought about. At the end of 12 months, he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. The king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? One day here, about 12 months later, the king was walking in the palace and he just stopped and made the statement. Well, isn't this great palace, this great Babylon that I have built for the house of thy kingdom, isn't it by the might of my power? And isn't it for the honor of my majesty? Isn't that what this is all about? A reflection of my power and my majesty? Not realizing that the God of heaven ruleth in these kingdoms. And not realizing that the God of heaven setteth up over them whom he wills. had learned the lesson. Daniel pleaded with him to change, to lengthen his tranquility. And while the word was in the king's mouth, before the king had even finished uttering this statement, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. That's just how fast it could happen, and did happen. Now the interesting thing is that today, as we listen to the various candidates for office, we hear each one bragging no less than Nebuchadnezzar. If you don't believe it, listen to those debates tomorrow night. And you're going to have one saying how much he's done and how much he can do and how much he will do, and the other one saying how much he's done and how much he can do and how much he will do. Each one pointing to me, number one, I will do. They wouldn't dare get up before a nationwide television audience and say, I don't have any power. I'm going to depend strictly upon God. They would never say anything like that. They don't realize this basic lesson here that's taught to Nebuchadnezzar. And maybe it doesn't matter too much whether or not they realize the lesson, because God still works this way. But the important thing is that you and I realize how things are. That we know, really, how things are in the realm of politics. It's God who removes and sets up kings. And he sets up the basis of men. Or he can set up the basis of men. And he reigns through these kingdoms. So thy kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. That lesson keeps coming back over and over. Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to have to know this. You're going to have to learn this. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. He really underwent a change. It said, the heart of a man is going to be taken out and the heart of a beast is going to be put there. And so his hair changed. It grew long to protect his body. I guess he didn't even wear clothes. His nails grew long and curved like a claw, like an eagle's claw. And he ate grass like the oxen. And the dew fell on his back. You know, every morning when I wake up, and I'm sure you've experienced it too, look out into the pasture and see the cows. They got the dew all over them. Why, if we were out there, we'd at least cover up or put a tent or something over us. Those cows get wet just like anything else. And so this is the way Nebuchadnezzar was, just like a beast in the field. And Mr. Haley's book here describes it as a beast on the grounds of the palace. But I prefer to think he was further away than that. He was probably just out in the wilds in hibernation of some kind. For however long this seven times was, possibly 3.5 years, 4 years, possibly 7 years, don't know. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, now this is the king talking now again, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. So at the end of this time, he said, his understanding came back. And we'd have to realize that at this time, he truly did have the realization that God ruled in the kingdom of men. Now let's see, what verse were we here? 34? Okay, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. Now, that's a phrase that we probably can't really fully understand the whole meaning of, because we're talking about the God of heaven. We're talking about his kingdom, or his authority, his sovereign power, the fact that he rules. And that his kingdom is from generation to generation. So there's not going to be any end to that kingdom. Of course, Daniel learned some of that lesson back in this original vision that he had of this image with the four kingdoms in it. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? God's just going to carry out his will, working through these powers in the earth and in the heaven. Nobody can challenge him. Nobody can stay his hand. Nobody can ask him, what you're doing? Why are you doing? Nobody can challenge him at all. Seeing that Nebuchadnezzar had learned, finally, the point. And at the same time, my reason returned unto me. So he had been insane for this period of time. Now he'd gotten his right mind back. And for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me. And my counselors and my lords sought unto me. And I was established in my kingdom. And excellent majesty was added unto me. I was established in my kingdom. So Nebuchadnezzar was just as powerful as he ever was. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Nebuchadnezzar certainly knew that. No doubt he hadn't forgotten the fact that he walked into his palace and said, well, this great kingdom, all of these works, they're my works, my power, my majesty. And while the words were still in his mouth, his kingdom was taken away from him. Those that walk in pride, he said, they can be abased. You know, we've seen a very similar thing right here with President Nixon. When President Nixon won the election, I'm sure you all remember this, he had the greatest mandate of any president who had ever run for the office, any man who had ever won the office. The greatest majority. He won it by the greatest majority of anybody. And he had, of course, Agnew as his vice president. And McGovern, you know, during the campaign, he had chosen Eagleton as his vice president. And Eagleton had to bow out because he'd had a psychiatric history. And he had to get him another vice president. And I remember hearing Nixon make the statement, one thing that I'm going to do, I'm going to stay with Agnew. I'm not going to dump Agnew like McGovern had done Eagleton. But yet, within a short time, he became the only president to resign. Agnew had already resigned. And we had a man who was president who hadn't even been elected. So he knows how to abase those that have the pride. God can do that. We've never seen anything like that before in this nation. Nobody would have ever thought that Nixon would have gone out in 2 years like he did. But he did. And what did he do? Probably not anything different from any other president before him. No worse than other presidents. He just was stupid enough to keep those tapes, and he got caught. That's the whole sum of it. That's what the authorities are saying right now. One of the attorney generals who's writing a book about it made that statement. If he hadn't kept his tapes, they wouldn't have caught him, but it was due to pride, ego. Now, who would have known during that election, who would have known what man God wanted for that office? Because the man who got the office eventually wasn't even eligible to be voted upon. So there's a lot to this now. There's all to this. God removes the kings and he sets up the kings as he sees fit, and he rules in his kingdoms. So we then are able to understand in the book of Romans, where he says that we recognize these powers that be, and we give honor to whom honor, and tribute to whom tribute, and custom to whom custom, and so on, because they are God's ministers, and they don't bear the sword in vain. If you violate the law, they can use the power. But let us, at the same time that we learn that lesson, also learn the lesson of the previous chapter, that if they make a rule that conflicts with God's law, we choose God's law first. And we suffer whatever consequences may come, if it means the fiery furnace, okay. But this doesn't mean we do not respect the law of the land. It means that we respect God's law higher than the law of the land. And we have a higher respect for the law of the land than most people, because we realize that the law of the land is what God has put here. And so we respect it as God's law. Unless some man distorts it and makes it conflict with God's law. Those important lessons are in these two chapters. Important principles. Way back there in the time of captivity, they were laid down and they were practiced. And they still are principles that we can follow today, which are taught in the New Testament. So we'll conclude there. Does anybody have any questions or any comments? Next time, Lord willing, we'll begin with the fifth chapter.